welcome back, AIMP Nashville Pubcasters. It's great to have you with us today. My guest on this episode is Drew Sherrod. He is a partner of Version LLC and the host of The Sync Room. Man, let me tell you, he's going to give us some great knowledge on the sync world, as well as some advice on how to get into it. So buckle in and be prepared to get some knowledge. How you doing, Drew?
I'm good. I like your intro. Thank you for that.
Hey, man. I try to bring the pizzazz on this stuff. So I usually start off by asking my guests, like, what got you here, man? What, give me from point A to point B.
Well, point A to point B is more like point A to point C, but we're gonna skip the whole alphabet and just make it simple. I started in publishing in the 90s, spent 20 years in Los Angeles as a music supervisor and a producer, and then came back home in 2018 and got on the Nashville horse again and have been riding it ever since.
Dude, that was the most succinct bio I've ever heard. That was succinct. I like it.
Well, I freeze dried it.
Well, at least some room, because I think part of your brilliance, having a, for disclosure, Drew and I worked together at one of our incarnations of companies that we worked at, and I found him to be a brilliant mind in the sync space, amongst other things, but definitely in the sync space. He makes a hell of a hot sauce, but that's a whole separate interview. But
it's a different podcast.
Different podcast, not this one. But so, Drew, tell me, like, because sync is such a specific world inside music publishing. What exactly is the role that you were doing? Were you like creating the music or hiring the creators that created the music or pitching the songs, building a library? Let's walk down what that really looked like, your day to day.
Well, it was all that. It was all that. And at that time, I was working in a trailer house, which is, that's where the movies and TV shows and everybody, they go to these trailer houses to get their advertising done. And that's everything from the trailers that you see before a movie all the way down to like the 15-second crack cocaine trailer that you see online that has to get squeezed in before your YouTube video. It's all that stuff. So at the time I was, you do a lot of recording and you do a lot of choosing of music. And at that time we were working off of CDs. So it was a process of finding out first what movie you're on and then where are they in the process? You know, like, do they need new ideas or do they need to replace an existing song? You know, where you are in the process is what dictates your day, so to speak. And you find it, you replace it, you give options. And if none of them work, or if they come back and they're too expensive, or it's somebody like Neil Young and he just says, nope, you can't use it, no matter what the money is, then you have to create something as quickly as you can to replace it. And you have to stay on that legal line of don't step on any legal toes, but get it done fast and make it absolutely perfect.
So I hear a couple different things, just for those that might be interested in this particular world on the business side, that you have two sets of skills. A, you are yourself a creator, which I do know because we work together and you have, we can discuss this later if you want, but I know that you work with masters, do edits and remasters and remakes of different things. So I know you have that skill. Do you need to have that skill as well, or just a depth of knowledge of songs? Because I can say from my end, for my listeners, that you get briefs for these films and they're looking for very specific things to fill certain sections of, whether it's background bar music or it's the big, big theme song while they make their first kiss, or somebody's about to get killed and they need a song that has this heaviness to it. So again, kind of help us walk through, like, what do you think the skill sets are needed? I think yours is a specialty set because you are indeed a creator as well, but because you're saying that if you were pitching to one and they didn't have it, you would go in your studio and create it or hire someone to create it. Or so walk us through that. Like both. what you think you need and what your skill sets are.
Well, that's actually what got me into producing things myself, is because, you know, at some point everything's on spec in that world, which what spec means is that you have to get something done overnight and you know, the people that you work for, they're tough customers and they're either going to like it or they're not going to like it. And you can't pay someone until you find out that they like it. So spec just means you have to do this for free. And if it goes, then you get paid. Everything's on spec. And after a certain time, especially back then when people weren't really familiar with the process, you get to where people don't want to do things on spec. So you just do it yourself. That's how it started. You know, you can save a lot of money by getting somebody like me who does everything. But then a lot of people don't want somebody that does everything. Some people want a staff or a team. So you'll get somebody that's good at the production part and the overnight part, or you'll get like a person who's good at being a librarian. And then you'll get somebody who's good at, you know, plowing through songs and translating the creative information. It's a little bit like song plugger in a way where, you know, you can have a song plugger who's really good at hearing what an A&R guy is looking for and being able to find that, is, you know, assuming that he has it in his catalog. And then you've also got that song plugger who listens to the production and can do this tweak and that tweak, or, you know, send it back to the drawing board and say, you know what, put a new vocal on this because I want to send it to so-and-so. And it's very similar that way. If you can talk the talk, that puts you onto that level where you can outsource production stuff. But if you can walk the walk and talk the talk, then you can either work with those producers to get what you need, or you can just do it yourself. And the thing is, if you're in-house and you do it yourself, you're not going to make any money or any extra money, but your life is going to be a bit easier. So a lot of times it's not necessarily whether you can or you can't. Sometimes it comes down to, do you want to friend so-and-so do it because they missed out on the last one and you want to make sure that they get their chance to finish something?
Makes sense. Well, I have another kind of, we'll get on the creative side here in a second, more of like the writer and what the do's and don'ts of that kind of looks like. But on the business side, I remember it was like, oh man, it would have probably been late 90s, early 2000s, where I really started to get more involved in sync. And I remember meeting Randall, is it Poster? Isn't that what the big music soup?
Yeah. Yeah. On paper and on screen, he's Randall Poster, but at the table, he's Randy Poster. Yeah.
Well, Randy, I remember he was in town and I met with his assistant, and I was very quickly stunned by the amount of music knowledge those kind of people have. Randy's done a lot of films and they usually hire him to pull all the music in. Correct me if I'm wrong in that, yeah. On that level, yeah, of supervision. But his breadth and depth of all kinds of music, when I say, like, I thought I knew music, I say I listen to everything. These people listen to everything, and that's a very specific skill set. Maybe you could touch on that a little bit for anybody trying to want to get into that kind of role. Like, what can they do to what advice would you give them to prepare themselves for that kind of role if say somebody like me, which I'm not doing that because I'm 55, but I'm new in the business and I want to get into that kind of world. What would you advise them to do, and how can they prepare themselves for that job?
Well, I think the key thing is, well, you always want to just be prepared for whatever. If you're going to be independent, then you need to know as much as you possibly can, because that diversifies your skill set and can get you more jobs. But if you want to go in-house, I'd say the most important thing is to know what that place is good for, and, you know, make sure you understand all that stuff. It comes down to your skill set that you want to go in with. No matter what you go in with, you're going to come out with a better knowledge of everything. So, you know, experience is going to get you a lot of that stuff. It shouldn't hold you back from trying, especially when you have answers on your phone that you can just get. But, it comes down to where you are. If you're in trailers, you're gonna learn about library music, whether you want to or not. You're going to learn about classical music, because when they have no more money, they go to classical music, and you got to learn that. And you're in TV, you need to learn what's happening right now, what's hot, you know, what everybody knows, that, you know, like the songs people know, but maybe they don't know the singer who sings them. Those are good for TV. I would encourage them to stop looking at music from genre to genre and start looking at music as far as functionality and shape. And that means that when you hear a song that's fast and it gets to the point quickly, and it's, you know, like boom, 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 and then you've got the feeling of it, you know, that's a song for a trailer. That's a song for an advertisement. When you hear a song that takes a moment and stretches it out really far, like say Radiohead, like those linear songs that don't always have these big punchy choruses, then that's a good song for a movie, because movies are all about taking a moment and stretching it out. And then TV shows, it's all about recognition and manipulation of emotions. If you start listening to music that way, you'll find that it's not so complicated. You know, like it's less that you're at the record store looking at records from genre to genre, and it's more like you're at Home Depot looking at screwdrivers and saws and what they actually do for you. And that's an important distinction. If you can make that transition in your mind, then you can go into a supervisor situation, or you can accommodate those supervisors, you know, as a pitch person or whatever.
I want to segue from like somebody wanting to be in the business of music, sync music and pitching and all that, but into the creators, the writers that might think that they want to get into this. Cause I said for either one to touch on a little bit on my end, like I know that like start paying attention to movies, TV shows, and you can hear the tone that the music sets. Like a Yellowstone has a distinct vibe. You start hearing the music and it kind of leads you into what kind of music they want there. And if you're, I get a lot of writers anymore that say, I want to write sync music. And the first thing I do is go pay attention to the TV shows, like, or the popular ones that you think you could write songs for, and really digest, like just like you do the top 10 of the radio, start looking at top TV shows and really start accumulating and studying the music. But I know this is so good because you and I've worked together, and I've seen you talk to writers to really guide them into how to write for sync. So why don't you, if you can, in the quickest, easiest way you can, give the, like, I know there's like the Drew Scherer 10 commandments of writing sync, but maybe give us the overview of the do's and don'ts of if a writer's listening and they want to get into this, what are some do's and don'ts and what are some things they can look at in their writing to prepare themselves to be better for sync?
Well, let's start with, I think, the things that should be obvious, but are not. And that's things like brand names. I know a lot of writers, you know, you can get, and this goes back to the function of music too. So here's, you know, here's looking at it and hearing it through my brain. I know that if you're a songwriter and you say Budweiser, or if you say Chevy, or if you say Ford Mustang, and you say a brand name, it's super helpful because it projects a scenario, it projects a vision and an emotion. It's really functional. It's a functional thing to do. But it's not so functional in sync because it's a brand name. You know, you're never going to get on a Coke commercial if your chorus of your song says Pepsi or even Ford or Chevy. Like you just can't do it. And nobody is going to be so precious with your song that they tell you, hey, if you'll just take this word out, we'll use your song, because things go too quickly for that. So I'd say the commandment number one is don't put lyrics in your song that aren't going to be usable, or they're going to be deal killers. And I think any brand name is a deal killer.
So generic as far as like naming specific products.
Well, you know, you're talking about the human condition. You're talking about scenarios, things like that. And they don't have to have those brand names in them. I think it's a little bit like saying cuss words. And God knows I have a problem with saying the dirty words. I mean, around Tim, especially. It's a crutch. It's a crutch. You know, you don't need to do it. And it's the same thing. You know, like I think the more intelligent writers are going to stray away from those brand names in their songs. Gosh, there's a lot of people that are not going to like hearing me say that, but it's true. You know, the other thing, and I think this goes to a much bigger conversation about Nashville songwriting in general, but traditionally, country music and songwriter-based music are storyline-based. You've got a linear story in your song. Not always, of course, Everything depends on everything I say. There's always going to be an exception, but for the most part, you've got a lot of linear story pathway type of songs, and those can be limiting because they're so specific. You know, when you listen to songs that get a lot of airtime on screen, they're going to be a little bit more broad. They're going to talk about the way people feel. They're going to talk about results. They're going to talk about the path of getting somewhere, but not necessarily the details. And I think story-based songs have those details. And I think that's what makes them great story songs. You know, like the details that we all have in common are, that's the data, that's the information that binds us as humans. And that's why that music is so important. But again, when you back away from the art and you start to look at the craft, then you're saying that a more effective screwdriver is going to have such and such type of tip on it. You know what I mean? And then it just turns the screw a little bit better for this kind of film or that kind of film.
What do you think if I'm sending a song to a music supervisor outside the song itself? Music supervisors generally are looking for something that's easily cleared. Can you touch on what that means? And if, as a writer getting into it, how can they be better prepared to serve a supervisor to get their song placed?
Okay. Well, okay. You're a chef and you're in a kitchen and you have to get your dish out to the people. And how many tasters do you have to get through in order to get your dish tasted by the actual people, you know? And the more writers and the more publishers and the more people that are attached to any project, that's an additional person that has to get, you know, check off, that has to sign off on getting things done. And so, you know, if you're writing a song for any purpose, and you know that it's going to have to pass muster. You know, that's the pathway from your song to the screen. But if you're writing a song and it's already passed muster and it's already on the screen, then you have to think about, oh gosh, how many people do I have to get through in order to make this official? And that's why, you know, the fewer people have to approve something, the more attractive it's going to be by the people who have to go through the motions of getting the approval. What you may not see behind the curtain is that not everybody answers their phone at night, you know, and not everybody will give permission to have their baby, their precious song in something without knowing more information about it. So you're going to have to spoon feed information to these people, and you're also going to have to jump through a lot of hoops, and you're also going to have to negotiate price and bargain, and then at the end of the day you're going to have to get them to all agree on it to some degree.
Yeah.
In order to get it done, it's a lot of work.
Well, Drew, that's been some great info on both, because you're such a creative, which I think is awesome that you, having seen you work and able to guide young talent, but also you are actually physically in it. Like you're creating the music that's getting in film and TV and continue to remix and do that kind of stuff. So I know you have a skill set and you know how to talk to the creatives and help them become better at what they do. But tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now, what you got going on in the future.
Well, right now, I've just teamed up with my amazing better half, Gail, and we've started sort of our own sync operation. When I first moved back to Nashville, I came back to a completely different city. I mean, if you think about it, Nashville in the 90s and then Nashville in the 2000s, there was quite a growth spurt. So I was expecting to come back to a Nashville that really, you know, was on top of their sync game, and it turned out to not be the case. And not in an insulting or not in a negative way, but it took me a minute to figure out that really the foundation of Nashville business is just its own thing. A lot of you already probably know that, but because of that uniqueness and that writer-centric trajectory, it makes the sync business very different. You know, it, when it comes to the context of Nashville. So anyway, getting into the sync world, but still being in Nashville proved to be a lot more difficult than to me it should have. So, you know, as a result, of course, I worked at a couple of stinker places, had some interesting experiences in the sync world in Nashville. And, you know, now I think I've been doing it long enough, 28 years. I think I'm prepared to try to fix the problem. That's what I'm going for. I know it sounds like a big bite to try to chew, but we started something called the Sync Room. The first one is going to be on April 13th. They're going to be 3 consecutive Saturdays quarterly, and they're going to be in person, and we're going to talk about the sync world, and I'm going to answer all the questions, and I'm going to first cover the universal basics, you know, the railroad tracks, the things that never change. And then second, I think I want to talk about the things that always change. And then third, I want to bring in key players, people that I think have something to say and can look at their own success in a way that people can learn from. And I think there's some people in my world who are already doing this. I'm not doing something revolutionary by doing it, but I think I am doing something important and revolutionary adjacent by doing it in person. Everybody else is doing it online. And I think I'm doing it for Nashville. I'm not doing it for just anybody. I think that the way Nashville works and operates and breathes and makes its money, it has its own way of doing everything. And not a lot of people can get their heads around both ends of that. You know, not a lot of people understand the Nashville world of music, and not a lot of people at the same time understand sync from, I want to say, every direction, because it's a different universe depending on whether you come at it from TV or film or clearance or trailers or representation or publishing or label or management or as an artist or as a writer. There's so many angles to come at sync from. I think I'm just one of the few people that get that. And I think you have to have all those angles in order to represent it in Nashville. So we're going to get Nashville on the same page with sync. The consulting company where you can hire me to come in and talk to your writer staff or even your pitch staff. If you want information about that, just go to theversionagency.com. And then if you want to get information about the Sync Room events, then just go to thesyncroom.com.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzi. Executive producer, Brandon Harrington. Mixing and editing by Casey Porter. And this has been a Dime Collective production.